Let's see, I'm here in Falls Pass. It's June the 9th, 2001.
And we have an honored guest.
An honored guest, who is John Petrinovich. And he's going to tell us a little about, first, a little bit about himself and where he's from and where he's born and all that kind of stuff, how old he is, just so we get an idea of what your background is, John.
Okay. My name is John Petrinovich. I'm a commercial fisherman. I was born and raised in Tacoma, Washington, and been fishing up in the Bering Sea and Falls Pass, Port Morrow area. Started in 1950. I'm 71 years old, and I've been continually fishing for all those years, and I've seen a lot of changes from the first time I started up until now. And I started as a purse seiner, and then I started from 50 to 60, to 50 to 59, purse seining, and then I started gilling at 60. I've been gilling it ever since, up until this year. And like I say, I've seen a lot of different things, a lot of fish, a lot of lean years, a lot of good times, and a lot of bad times.
Why don't you start telling us a little bit about what was the seine fishery like when you started, and who did you start fishing with?
Well, I started fishing with a fellow from Bellingham. His name was Pete Zitko, which I think he came up here when he was a 16-year-old kid. It was his dad back in probably 1910, 13, 14, or whatever.
What boat was that?
The one I was on was St. Peter was the name of it. And then I fished with Paul Martinez on the Dreamland for I don't know how many years, seining. And
what was the St. Peter like? What kind of boat was it?
It was a purse seiner, a 50-foot purse seiner.
50-foot wooden boat.
Wooden boat, and then this...
What kind of gear did it have in those days?
Cotton. Uh-huh. Everything was cotton, no nylon. It was cotton, and then later on it turned nylon, and we pulled by hand. And then in 1955, the power blocks came.
Well, say before the power blocks, how did you actually get the net back onto the deck?
Pull it by hand.
All by hand.
Well, they had a power roller on the turntable. You set the net, then the turntable turned, you purse the net up, and then this power roller didn't help you much, but there was nine fellows on the boat.
This was a gear-driven, or was it a hydraulic power roller?
No, it was a gear-driven. It had a shaft coming from the engine,
Oh, I see. No hydraulics in the...
No, not in that there. But then they went to the power blocks, and that was all hydraulics.
Now this turntable, how was it built?
Well, the net set on a turntable.
Was it just, was it powered at all?
No, it was a turntable with a shaft and gear, and then when you set the net, you would set it off the stern, naturally.
Okay, so
you would make the set, and then when you would start picking the net, before you start picking the net up, you would turn it. You could turn it by hand.
Okay.
And then you would lock it, a couple of pins, so it would, go like that while it's rolling, and then you would purse up, and the net, the rings would come on deck.
So how many men were pulling?
Well, there was nine of us. There was skipper, naturally. He didn't do any pulling, and the cook, he kept the purse lines going through the rings, and the rest of us were, in the skiff. We had a skiff guy. That was on the skiff. Well, you pulled all the net in, and then you dried it up, and you one end of the net, the course, were hooked onto the skiff. When it came up to the bunt. What they call the heavy part of the net, and then the rest of the crew would pull up. You dry up the fish, and then you would brail them.
What did you have for power for the brailer?
Well, it was hooked to the winch.
Okay, you did have a...
It had a long pole and the big brailer, it was like this, and it had a chain on the bottom with links, rings on it, and one guy would hold that, and you'd push the brailer in like this, and then the winch
and that would lift it up. That was a hydraulic winch?
Well, no, it was on the drum.
Oh,
on the winch, on the rope.
Oh, it was one of those.
So everything was done with blocks, tack,
what we used to call them nigger heads, didn't
we? Well, but then nigger head is this way, more or less.
Oh, okay.
This way. This had one on each side, and then a chain in the middle that worked off the...
The standard cast iron one that you see.
Yeah, and then a shaft to go into the engine, You got a jock clutch, you put it in.
Okay, so somebody was operating the...
Well, you'd pull it up like this and lift it up, and they push it over the top of the hatch. Mm-hmm. And then the guy let go of his chain, uh-huh. and the fish would jump. And then he'd pull the chain tight, he'd go back and uh-huh. reel the fish out.
Where were you fishing?
We were fishing here at East Anchor, around Hancock, Lutke. That area is Falls Pass area.
Who else was fishing out there at that time?
Well, naturally, I was fishing with them. The Martinez's were fishing.
Dreamland.
All the land whales.
Uh-huh.
Dreamland, Freeland, Wonderland, Polarland. They're all land boats. They're uh-huh. all Martinez brothers.
Uh-huh.
And then there were some other. There was 16 sailors from the Sound that came.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The rest were local from Sandpoint, King Cove, and
uh-huh.
and even here, I think. And
do you remember any of the local sailors?
Not offhand now, but you see, this was P. E. Harris
sure.
at the time, and they had four boats.
Which ones were they?
Well, the Martinez. No, I forget who fished for them at that time. This is going back 50 years, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then P. A. F., which was at King Cove,
uh-huh.
they had four boats. And then the La Merced was buying uh-huh. fish then, and that was Bez.
Nick Bez.
Was the Balboa, remember the Balboa?
The name's familiar, but I don't remember it fishing that.
Wooden seiners.
All of them were wood.
Seiners.
All of them were wood boats. Oh, yeah, there was a Seafair, there was St. John's Second. There was a boat called Bear, and God, I can't remember some of the others. And then when we finished fishing here, when this here area was done fishing, then we went up to Port Mulder and fished there. We had to shallow our gear because it's shallow water there.
Do you know when seining started in Mulder area?
Oh, God, that started way before my time, I believe.
Where they
got it up about 1913, 14 or something like that.
So were you you were fishing for P.E. Harris here?
No, I was fishing for PAF.
Oh, you fished for PAF.
And there. But then when I went to Martinez, then we fished for P.E. Harris here.
Uh-huh, right. Okay. I see. So you actually fished for both companies.
Well, I did.
During any particular year, did you go from out here to the south side? Did you go to the north side?
Oh, yeah.
Season?
No, the same season. You fished uh-huh. here for the month of June, and then you'd go up there at the end of June when this was over.
So you were after red salmon then, too?
Everything was red.
So you went to Mulder to get the reds up there, too?
And so P. Harris sent tenders up to Mulder to
bring
the reds?
They brought tenders down, and they brought fish down to here. And well, I think Nick Best took over this here place before he bought Peter Pan. Yeah, before he bought PAF.
That's right.
Bought it this here, and then...
In the 50s.
And then, then the fish... They brought the fish down here that fished for, well, it'd be Peter Pan then.
Uh-huh.
And, but PAF had a cannery in Port Mulder.
Sure.
And we unloaded in Port Mulder when we fished for PAF.
Right. Uh-huh.
And then we had quite a long season. We started in May getting the net ready in the Sound.
Uh-huh.
And fished the Falls Pass season, fished the Port Mulder season. And then we go down to Dutch Harbor and McCushion Bay and fish for humpies, uh-huh. beach seine.
Wow.
And then we'd stop off at Kodiak, and then we'd go to the Puget Sound, fish Puget Sound. The salmon season there, so it was from May till after Thanksgiving.
Wow. So did you ever fish any beach seining in this area?
Not here, but we did at Mulder in Harrington Bay.
Oh, you did it in Harrington Bay?
Harrington Bay was predominantly dogs. In fact, it was closed up before I started. They built two canneries in there.
Sure, I remember that.
In Harrington Bay, and the seiners used to load up, and from some of the old-timers that I was fishing on the Dreamland that fished at that time in the 20s and, 30s, they were getting 2 cents a piece for these chums.
Uh-huh.
And there was a cannery right there.
Uh-huh.
And the remains of it's still there. In fact, they had a cannery in Nelson Lagoon, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did be staying a little bit in Mulder Bay, way up in the bay.
Nothing in Blasnap, Eisenbeck?
No, I never was in there, but other people fished there.
Nothing up at St. Catharines or anything?
No, they fished there, but I never fished
there. Yeah, that would have been too shallow.
Did you ever fish up at Urillo Bay?
No, I never fished there either. But some of the gill-netters here later on fished there.
Okay.
So I'm curious about the skiff that you used when you were purse seining.
What kind of skiff were those? We had a skiff with a lead in it. A net, but they call that a lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he would set the net, he'd say, let go, and we'd let go of the lead, you know, in the skiff.
Uh-huh.
And then when it come near, you'd time it when it comes there, and then the guy would pull the pelican over there.
Oh, yeah.
And then the net would come, and then you would cross them together, you know, like that there, and he'd make the set. Then we'd go pick the lead up while they were pursing, and then come back to the...
What do they use for power in those?
Well, they had little inboards, you know, start out with four cylinders.
Oh, probably an automobile engine?
Well, I think they're gray marines.
Four-cylinder
grays, and they got bigger and bigger.
Uh-huh.
Then they had little rollers in the back and to help pull the lead up.
Uh-huh.
And then I believe this is 1955, a couple of guys came down here to gillnet from Boulder.
Now that was PAF people.
Yeah, we were PAF up there.
Was that with the Penn boats?
Or? They had Bryant boats.
Oh, the Bryant boats.
Good boat.
Yeah, well, the Bryant and the PAF boats are almost similar, except the Bryant had a little better cabin on it than PAF boats. I mean, the
Penn
boats had just a little cover.
They
got that there. But they sent down the Bristol Bay sailboats when they went to power in 52. They sent down the these double end, and they put a little steel trunk cabin and put a little four-cylinder gray in there, and that's what I had the first year and all, first gillnetting, and then they got Bryant boats, then they got bigger Bryants.
How long did it take those double enders to disappear up there?
Well, I think, I don't know, maybe about 3 years after I did, and start to maybe 62.
So you didn't see the sails up there?
No, there wasn't no sails in Muller. Muller, they didn't start gillnetting there until 55.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that's what he's saying.
It's all saying.
Oh, but I'm curious.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then a couple of them came down here and tried it out.
What year do you think that was?
That was about 55, I believe, a couple of them came down
here.
Who
was that, you know?
Jay Trottier was one of them, and I don't know if he's still with us or not. He's from Bellingham, and he went down here. Then 56, and it was all cotton gear, linen and cotton, and then
no power at all. For bringing
no, up? they had the power rollers.
Oh, they did.
And it was hydraulics.
Oh.
And then the Bryant boats came out. And then after we put our 1 year training in those conversion, then we got a Bryant boat, and they had a reel with a Ford transmission.
Oh,
you know,
three
speeds.
Oh, really? Same deal.
Yeah, more
with
or less.
The knob on it.
Yeah, well, no, yeah, and they had that, but they had a motor, and they had a chain that was a reel.
But how did you...
And then you had a dead roller in the back, see?
Sure.
It just spun with the two Fairleys on it.
How did you get from the saint being a seiner into the gillnetting part of it? Because you were part of PAF?
No, I fished with individual, just because they fished for PAF or Peter Pan, they didn't own the purse seiners. They were individuals that owned purse seiners.
Uh-huh.
And I think 58, 59 wasn't really a big year up here, in both areas. And I knew, from Tacoma, where I'm from, half a dozen, about five or six of them, that came down from Bristol Bay to fish for Muller.
Billy Garetti, one of them?
No, he came after I did.
He
started after I did with Carlson, Albert Carlson, Carlson, Vic Anderson, John Peterson. They all fished the bay. And then when this new area opened, they came down here.
Oh.
So then I went and asked this, the superintendent.
Who was the superintendent?
Fred Shields.
Fred Shields.
Fred Shields was superintendent at PAF up there. And then we then I started there, and then we got, you know, bigger boat.
So what did the company provide in those days?
We were all company fishermen. They provided the boat, the gear, the groceries, a little bit that we got. You know, it's not like now where you got all this
fancy stuff.
Yeah. You got refrigerators on the boat and stuff like that. And they paid the insurance, you know, actually, and they done the maintenance on the boat. And then we would go up there, and they would give us $200, what they call running money. And we would have to get the boats ready.
Uh-huh.
And that was our work, to get the boats ready. Okay. And some of us that were net men, we would have to hang the gill net, and the others would paint the bottom of the boats.
So the nets were all prepared up and moored?
Yeah, at that time they were. You know, we'd hang them up there. And then after a while, then they would send them all down Seattle, and then, I don't know, John Peterson, a few guys
hung them in the winter, yeah.
At Seattle Marine.
Oh, Seattle Marine.
I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they hung them there, and then they would ship them back up. And then we continue on being company fishermen for, well, I don't know, till they asked us to buy the boats, you know. Okay. And there was some independent fishermen like John Peterson, Cliff Milling, and Art Hogg, and Olaf Larson. They had their own boats, and they had to pay for everything, but they were getting a little more for their fish.
What did you get your fish? You remember?
Well, when I started here in 1950, per se, we got 32 cents a piece for sockeye.
Uh-huh.
And everything was by piece then.
Right.
Till after it became a state, and then they had to go by pounds. And we got paid by the piece. You know, I still remember that 1950 was 32 cents a piece for the fish. And then the fishery started to grow with the gill netters down here in 1960. That's when, everybody went down, other than the ones that had conversions.
Now, that's right after statehood, so they took these traps out, right?
The traps went illegal. Yeah, the traps were gone.
That opened it up, right, to the gill netting.
Yeah, the traps were here in 1950 when I fished. Mm-hmm. And they were gone when I came down gill netting.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't come down here in 60 because I had a conversion. And then, you know, you're going to travel for that big thing and all that, thinking forever to get down here. And then we start coming down all every year, and we continued on coming down.
What kind of engine you have in your first boat?
Well, like I say, there's a little four-cylinder lugger in the conversion, and then they were all gas at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lion had a Chrysler, and I think there were six cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
And then... then I got the newer Bryant, and we had three of them there, and they were V8 Chryslers.
Mm.
V8.
So 32 footers?
Yeah, they were 32 footers.
When did the first diesel show up?
Diesels came, we had the Chryslers, and the next boats, the next new boats that came up there, they came up with Waukesha diesels.
Oh.
And that was, I can't remember the year. So,
but you still had a gas boat when I was there in 74. You and Al Carlson
still had the Chrysler engine.
Or gas engine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Waukeshas came, and then they started to, naturally there's a lot of work on the wood boats. As you know, you guys are in the wood.
How many carpenters did they have working
on
the
boats? Well, they had one carpenter that was there always at the cannery there. When the cannery was operating, they had quite a few people working there. The Filipinos worked at the fish house,
uh-huh.
And then they had a couple of machinists, and they had they had machinists, electrician, and everything. And then in 1964 was the last year of the cannery there. They had a one line cannery, and they probably breaking even or not even that. So they
closed. Those were poor years, right?
They closed the cannery, and then they tendered it. Peter Pan, PF tendered it to King Cole.
King Cole.
And Peter Pan, right across the bay there, they had a little building there, and then Peter Pan had a dozen boats. and then they would tend, they would just anchor out and stay overnight because we fished 6 to 6 then. Mm-hmm. It was no around the clock, so 4 days a week, 6 to 6, and then the tenders would bring the fish down here. Mm-hmm. And then they closed the cannery and they made it, you know, like a fish camp, which it is now. Well, now it's a fish processing, you know. Right. And then they, and then I believe it was 66. I think it was 66 that
when PAF got bought out by Peter Pan.
Peter Pan bought out
PAF,
and then they closed that place, and all the boats came over there, and all the boats had to be put away in the winter on the ways.
Mm-hmm.
In case you couldn't leave a wood boat outside,
you couldn't. You
got to pop all the corks, the cotton out, and everything, and we had to put them all in there, and then that went on, and then they.
Well, how did this transition to private ownership?
Well, place? What happened, they, on these boats, like the Bryant boat that we had the gas engine in, well, there's always maintenance on there, and then some of the fishermen came up, like Olaf Larson and Otto and Harold, even Harold, they done carpenter work.
Harold, you
know? Yeah, right.
I mean, they got paid for it. Sure. They done carpenter work on it. Marvin came and helped Jack Stoffer, which was the machinist there, mechanic, put engines in because he had, you know, the engines they had to send down and get them overhauled.
Uh-huh.
And then I would go up there early, and they had these two little tin cans there, the glass
and Isaac
on the Isaac back.
And I'd go up there and weld on the bottom of them. And Dale, when he was a young kid, he came up Karanik, and he'd done that there. So some of the fishermen worked prior to help get it going. And then the the boats had to have garb and everything. So finally, they took the gas engines out, they replaced them with the 3208 Cat.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then when they had the deck all open, they redone the tanks and whatever. And then little by little, they wanted to get out of the company boats.
Well, who made that decision? You had to do with that?
No, I didn't have anything to do with it, but. I think the company, they get away from the maintenance,
uh-huh.
The insurance, the fuel.
Sure.
They everything. Pay for the fuel, and everything. You go up there and work on your boat, you just go grab something from the storeroom, bolt nuts or whatever, you know. And they pencil that out for the price that they were paying us compared. If we were independent, which we ended up paying for everything.
What kind of a deal did they give you?
Well, they sold the boat to us, which is a real reasonable price.
I know, but do you have any idea what it was? Remember what it was?
Yeah, I believe they sold the boat to me for $20,000 at that time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, what year were you up there?
That was 74, and I think that boat buyout thing was late 70s, 78,
78. Yeah, I think so, 79. And what they did, you know, in fact, you know, some of the boats had just done all this work,
huh?
And then they sold the boat. They want.
And those were nice boats.
Yeah, but they just.
CG boats.
They, you know, because that way, when you get a mechanic to work on the boat or a carpenter or anything, you got to pay because you're independent.
Sure.
And then you buy your own fuel, buy your own groceries. Pay your own airfare up and down because they paid us as company fishermen.
They did give you a bunkhouse, though, right?
Well, yeah, we got the bunkhouse to stay there while we're prior and after, because when you're fishing, you're not staying there too often. So it was better off for them, and it actually was a lot better for us.
Uh-huh.
You know,
well, the way the prices went.
Yeah, not being owned by the company store, more or less. Right. If you want.
What happened to the crew? Now, you were fishing by yourself.
That's all everybody had. Everybody was by themselves.
When did they start to...
Well, whenever somebody, when they went independent, you know, then they brought a son or a friend up there, down there, and then when myself, my son went up and worked at the beach gang.
Right.
I don't know. God. He was there.
74 he was there.
I know. He worked there 3 years in the beach gang, I believe.
Quite a few guys did. John Hanager.
Steve Carlson and...
kind of a way to move up.
And then they all started taking their crew members, so my son went with me, Jack, and he's been here ever since, you know. And then everybody else country. And then they started to build, you know, bigger boats, better boats. And bought mine. I had mine built. What's 82 was the first year I fished it.
Now, when did Bronco show up on the scene?
Well, he fished. When he came over from Europe, and I think he fished in Kodiak, he told me. Then he fished in Bristol Bay. And then he came down here and he got a permit. See, they came out with permits, I believe, in 74, and he started them. And, I gave you a lot of paperwork to fill out. And when you came to 20 points, you got so many points for fishing there so long, so many points for every year and all this here stuff, where you got 20 and you didn't have to fill it out no more, then you were issued a permit. The only thing you had to do was renew it, just like we do now. And other people bought them. And then Bronco came there and he had this one boat, a little fiberglass boat. And he started in Manicortis. They built one for himself. Another one, and it was like a luxury boat. I mean, he had more speed, he had accommodations, the stove was up on top, you know, the galley up there, we're down below in the dungeon, you know. This guy wanted one, that guy, and I was the sixth one, and he, I believe he built about 30 of them.
So what year was that again?
Well, mine was built in 80, end of 81. I fished in 82.
Well, what was the name of the first boat you had?
Certainly, man.
Same one.
Oh, it is the same
one. It looked good.
Oh, I thought you had.
No, I had number boats. They were all numbers. My Corrigan was number 4, and then I had one boat that was 66. They were all numbers. It just said PAF 66.
Sure. Yeah.
And
can't remember.
99 was my the one I had. You know, the
PG 99.
PG 99.
I remember that. Yeah.
PG 98, 97.
So 98 was out.
And I was 98. Yeah. And Frank Pazico was 97.
Yeah. Why don't we start back with your first boat? And what do you think, Chuck? That double ender, I'm really curious about that. Well, you were talking the other night about how good it was on the beach.
Well, it was a good beach boat because when you fished in Fort Muller, you fished the beach. And if it blows south, any westerly, it's blowing you to the beach.
And a lot of guys have died that way.
Well, they get and
rolled on the beach.
The stern was a bow, so when you're picking your net up, you just cut right through the there. Whereas now you get these big wide sterns
and a big
boy. You go one, you pull one foot up ahead, you go four that way, you know, as well. See, so but it didn't have the capacity, it didn't have the accommodations, and it didn't have the speed either.
Right.
But we competed, and that's what they gave us, you know. Where,
How much could one of those little buggers pack?
Well, you can get a good 1,000 fish in them.
Mm-hmm.
I know that when they were sailboats, they could pack more because they didn't have that trunk cabin and the engine. Everything was wide open.
All right.
They just pulled it in from the stern. Yeah, you can get in there. I never have. I think I don't know what I had in there. But I don't remember, but I did pack 1,000 fish in there.
And what kind of a little stove in it with a little kerosene.
Yeah, a little sweet stove.
Was it kerosene or gasoline?
Not kerosene, what do they call that?
Blazo.
Yeah.
So you didn't know way to dry out.
Burn your
I didn't burn it too much. I didn't trust those little things.
Yeah. You know, so how'd you keep warm then?
Put another jacket on.
Yeah, and how did you dry out?
Well,
you didn't.
I did.
Now you didn't stay on the ground. Guys went out in the morning.
We can only fish 6 to 6.
Uh-huh.
So how many hours did it take to run?
We'd have to leave about 4 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And then when I'm going out, the guys would leave an hour behind me to pass you up with these bigger boats, you know.
Uh-huh.
Just like I did the next year.
Now, how old were you just out of
curiosity? Well, I was.
When this was happening?
I started gill netting in, I was 30 years old.
30 years old.
See, but
so you'd had quite a bit of
steam. Well, I had experience being in that area, purse-seeing, so I knew the area, you know. I never gill netted before, but, you know, everybody starts, you know, a lot of them never.
It's amazing to me what some of these guys.
So I was 20. I was 20 and 50. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And
so you said you steered that conversion with a stick.
Yeah, they had a stick instead of a steering wheel.
A tiller. Uh-huh.
had a, just a stick on the starboard side,
and, you
and they had a chain, you know, hooked this way, and then the pulley went down here like this around to the other side of the quadrant, and this side there, and you just went,
hey. You know. How'd you lay your net out?
Well,
that must have been fun.
Well, it, the engine was right behind this little trunk cabin, and it had a box on it. And in gear, out of gear, stuck out over the box.
Uh-huh.
And it had a little hole in it. And we had a little piece of hardwood. It was quite long because it went from there to the stern. And you would bolt this onto there.
Uh-huh.
You had controls back there.
Uh-huh.
So then you would just push that long stick, and that would put it in gear. And you pull it back, you reverse, reverse, and that's the way you control the, those conversions.
Oh.
And then when you came to the Bryant bolts, naturally they had chain steering, you know, and then you had the cables.
Uh-huh.
But when you laid the net out, I mean, I'm trying to imagine how you got it out of the boat into the
water. Well, we had a reel. We had a reel.
Yeah,
we had a reel.
Okay, and fair leads.
Yeah. Yeah, they had that in there.
Okay.
They had the whole business in there.
Because I suppose you talked to Oscar Ness. Well, he probably ran one of those. He used to fish the bay with sailboats.
Yeah, well, they had sailboats, and they didn't have.
I think they basically threw the net in.
Yeah, well, they had a they had a dead roller and a
roller. Sure.
Yeah, okay.
And then on those there, you can see pictures of sailboats that they had that there. But they had everything open, and the bow was just a piece of canvas. You know?
Yeah.
They ducked underneath there and slept there. But we, like I said,
but no power. He had no power.
The sails. They
but no power roller or anything.
No,
either.
No.
What did you have for instruments in this tin version?
Nothing. I had a Boy Scout compass.
Boy Scout compass.
And a foghorn.
Oh, yeah, I remember those things. They're still in the, for sale in the store.
And they give you one of these hatchets that you can pound with. You can do just about anything with it.
Did you have any lights on there at all?
Oh, yeah, we had... we had running lights, and I think we had one little light down below, if I remember.
Uh-huh.
And running lights, you know, mass light.
Yeah.
When did the first radio show up?
Well, the bigger boats had radios,
uh-huh.
like Art and John. These guys have radios. I didn't get one until probably the third boat. You know?
Uh-huh.
They had just that one 2638 channel.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
But when you went up fishing, especially back in the early days there, at Moeller, how did you guys choose where you're going to set and stuff? And you probably didn't go too far beyond Bear River, right?
I went to sediment a couple of times with the conversion.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't choose. If you're out there and there's spots open, you set.
Uh-huh.
But if you had that conversion, you didn't get a very good spot because they were all taken.
How many boats were you talking about?
PAF had about, I would say, 1960, when I started, they had about 30 boats.
30.
And Peter Pan over there had about 15 boats over there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, and then it dwindled down because the fishing wasn't there, and then we had less and less boats, and then fishing came back, or the fish came back, and then more and more. And,
uh-huh.
And when we fished Falls Pass, everybody couldn't go to Moeller unless they had a market. And if you didn't have a Peter Pan market, even though they fished for Peter Pan down here,
uh-huh.
they still couldn't go up there.
Oh, okay.
And then, what was the name of that? I forget the name of the outfit was the first one that went up to Moeller with the great big crab boat. And then he took fish and he delivered the Kodiak. Pacific Pearl.
Oh, Pacific Pearl.
They were the first ones that came up there, and then little by little more processors, and you know, it just snowballed to where it went real big, and now it's back. Just, you know, Peter Pan in one process.
What was going on in Nelson Lagoon with the Nelson Lagooners in those days?
Well, I never fished over there, though our permits entitle us to, but you had to have the 29 mesh gear to fish in the river. They set netted and they drifted in a river, and some of them drifted out there, and some still do drift out on the bare riverside. A lot of them come down here, too.
Do they beach sing those days?
Yes, they beach sing in Harrington Bay. Mm-hmm. Paul Gunderson, he used to beach sing, and so did Sherman Johnson, mm-hmm. you know, for chums, and there was a lot of chums there at that time.
Well, there were never any company boats over there. They were all private boats, or
what happened? Well, I went over there when it was closed at the Molder side. Harrington Bay was open, and not a lot of us, quite a few went over there to fish for chums, you know, gillnet.
But what I was wondering is that the company owned boats, yeah. PG boats, and those. Did any of the Nelson Lagooners get in on that, or were they?
Yes, some of them had company boats, yeah. Uh-huh. I remember.
The Foodie Orloff.
Yeah, well, he lived in
Port Hyde.
Yeah, but he lived in Muller there. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they started off with company boats.
The Nelsons?
Oh, yeah, the Gunnersons and the Nelsons. Oh, yeah, they had company boats until they.
But they also had their own boats by the time.
Right. But prior to that, they did. You know, so some of those kids are close to my age now. You know, that I grew up with. You know, knowing them. So they all got their own boats now, just like everybody else. There isn't a company boat around now.
No.
Amazing how fast they went, the wood boats.
Well, so how long did it take this movement from? All the boats leaving Muller and coming down here and fishing during June and then going back up this
Well, we used to start down here at that time was June 1st.
Uh-huh.
And there was no days or quotas or caps or whatever they got like now. We go down there and start on June 1st and we leave prior to that. And the residents from Nelson Lagoon and King Cove, Sandpoint, Lost Pass, and we fish there. And then when we seen it was just about done, then we go back to Muller mm-hmm. and fish there. Plus the Saners, you know, they fish down here too.
When did the Saning stop up there?
let me see. The Sanings and Gillnetters.
Well, the gear wasn't allowed.
Well, yeah, we were fishing together. And we were getting in each other's way, basically.
Yeah, sure.
You know.
One
gear was in front of another gear was behind the gear. So what happened, I forget what year it was now. 60s, in the middle 60s, I believe. Yeah, something like that. I you know, for so many of those years, that they went and arbitrated that the church, where the church is.
Oh, yeah.
That we were 4 days a week, mind you. That 1 week, which is 4 days, the first seniors would be north of the river, north of the church, and the gillnetters were south of the church. And the next week, you'd flip-flop. We would be on this side.
To separate.
And they would be there. So you wouldn't get into each other's way of the gears.
Right.
So, well, that worked out for about maybe 2 years,
uh-huh.
if I remember right. But then, sometimes, one type of gear would be at the right side of the river.
At the right time.
At the right time, and they went back on the other side. Because naturally, in the beginning of the season, the fish are coming from the north. And if you were there when the right tides were, and then you happen to be on this side, and then the fish, you know, get minus tides or something, and they blow back from the river or, you know, stuff like that. You'd be on. So they went and re-arbitrated, and then we were flip-flopping every day.
Mm. Huh, really?
Yeah. We were flip-flopping every day, and that lasted for me. Well, then the Sanders weren't catching that much, you know. We'd go there and scrape up a couple hundred fish a day or something, an individual. And they get about, you know, let's say 500-600 on a 9-man crew. There was nothing there, so they were dropping off like flies, you know, not coming up. But still, if someone there then, for 1 year, for one season, Paul Martinez was there by himself. Young Paul. Uh-huh. Well, I call him Young Paul because he's already not the old man that I fish with. And he had half that every other day. He could have that.
Oh, wow.
Did he clean up?
Not really, because he wasn't there after that. That was the last year, because there's no, you know, stuff for the Seder's, you know. But he held that because he was a Seder. Mm-hmm. And then after no more Seder's, then it was, you know.
You mean they just petered out? They just
weren't
catching enough fish.
Yeah, right. There was, you know, it used to be all Saint like years ago, you know.
But now they're not allowed up there, right?
Yeah, they can, they're allowed to go, they can come there.
Oh, really?
There's no line for them. But they can't go beyond sentiment, I believe. And they
compete with all the Gilmanis now would be pretty rough.
No, they couldn't get in there now.
No.
But they did, I don't know how many years ago, maybe 10 years, 8, 9, 10 years ago, there was a couple that come up there fished around Sandy River there. You know, but no, they couldn't make it there. I see any. And that was the same country.
I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But what about your first boat up from the double ender one, the converted?
Well, it was the Pride boat.
Okay.
And it was six cylinder, gray engine in it, and it had everything was in the forecastle. It had a stove.
Mm-hmm.
That one had a stove.
One of those little Neptune stoves?
Yeah, small one.
Mm-hmm. Neptune.
With those old type carburetors, not these new type ones.
With a drip type?
Yeah. Well, I got a drip too now. It's a different kind now.
Uh-huh.
And that dirty little knob on the top there. And he had a cover in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Just enough to cover it. You stood on top of the engine.
Uh-huh.
That's where your engine was, right? Besides down in the forecastle, you know, plus you're standing on it. And the wings came, you know, like this. And if you were driving that thing and you were bucking the sea or something, you had to wear rain gear because you would always be wet. It was in the open.
Jeez. Was there a bunk in there somewhere?
Oh, yeah. They had two bunks in there.
Two bunks?
Yeah. And then when we put the boats away, we had to take the trunk cabin off. It was bolted.
Uh-huh.
And the wings were bolted with the piece of oak here. We had to take that off and put it on the hatch, take the stovepipe off and the exhaust because it could fit into the warehouse. And then when you come back the next year, well, you couldn't do much work on it because the trunk cabin was away. And then when they launch you, they put you on the launching pad and a couple of three guys pick up that trunk cabin and put a couple of bolts in and away you go.
Uh-huh.
And you put it together. And then I forget what year it was, when Amo was superintendent. When he was superintendent, and they used to, in fact, Joe Gorey, that's fishing now, he was working for this guy named Weber driving pilings.
Mm-hmm.
And they go all over and drive pilings, and he was driving pilings there, and then he got up.
For traps?
No, for the dock.
After traps.
Dock. Pilings and laying the decking down, you know, went Squaw Harbor, they went all over. Then he got to go fishing, and we gave him a boat, and then afterwards they started permits, and they had to buy one.
No, that's how Joe got in.
Yeah, him and a few others. And then that one year, when we all went home, they didn't pick any boats up, and they lifted the warehouse beams. They took the beams off this way and made you truss. They bolted on these truss. So we didn't have to take all that stuff down. Only an antenna if we had a radio.
Uh-huh.
That was a big improvement.
How many boats were in that warehouse?
Oh, God, there must have been.
That's a big warehouse.
Yeah.
Is that still there?
They got boxes in there and you know.
Oh, no more boats?
No, boats.
All the boats are on the pad.
On the pad because they're plastic boats now. We sit outside of blocks and wedges there. They must have had about... Oh, God, we used to put 30 bolts in there. I mean, you jammed them in there. The way you put them in, the way they came out. So, if you were way in the back, you'd last out.
Right.
Or vice versa. And then they did put some on the end of the dock because they had a stiff leg.
Oh, okay.
They put the bigger ones on the dock, the independent ones. They lined them on the outside dock.
And by the way, Chuck, you were asking about Nelson Lagoon. I remember when I was up there, they had the Reefer 6.
Yeah.
And it's a cult, you know, Brian thing that, I remember, what was his name, that slim, wrinkled up guy, he was a character, Harold Goodmanson,
right.
Harold Goodmanson,
he
was over there all summer in Nelson Lagoon.
They put it in Nelson Lagoon because they unloaded on it,
And then the tenders would come.
The tender come and load it. And then they brought it up into Ilmik. And we, Gilnetters would unload on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, they had a couple tanks.
Uh-huh.
The chilled water, he lived up on top with a stove and, you know,
right.
And everything. And underneath him had all the machinery and the circulated water, you know.
When did that end? How long did Harold...
I don't know, he was there a few years, quite a few years. And then you come in on loan, and you have a kind of little elevator on there, and then we pitch it on, you know, overpaid by piece, and you just dump them inside there.
Uh-huh.
And then once a day, or, yeah, maybe once a day, goes a little Baranoff and Tippenkopf.
Oh, yeah.
They're flat bottoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can get into the Ilmik on high water, and then they transfer the fish over, and then the next time you take them down, them over. Or we catch them outside and load on them. The fact that I've seen him up there, Baranoff was up the motor before I left. Oh. But it's built on top, you know, it's not, just, because that was an open. They were never all open boats, just like all of them.
And the Tevenkoff's still around, too, I know, in Bristol Bay.
Is there a big boneyard up there of old boats?
What happened? Boneyard, everything. Reels and stuff like that. Not too much on boats.
What happened to all those O'Brien boats?
Well, the Brian, I really don't know. When I built my new one and shipped it up, I sold it to a guy from Bristol Bay.
Mm. The PG?
Yeah, the
PG-99.
The Kathy V.
Was that the second Bryant boat? Or what?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, okay.
And
the Penn boat was the first, the Penn. You had a Penn boat?
I never had a Penn boat.
Oh, you never did?
No, all Peter PAF.
Oh, okay, I see.
And then when they came over from the other camp,
But those PG boats were a newer model, right?
Right.
From the, what they called the Penn boats.
Right, right. And then they shipped mine up. In fact, what's his name? On the Kathy V took my boat up to the bay.
Oh, Junior?
Yeah.
Oh,
really? Had a big stiff leg on the dock.
Uh-huh. Oh, they put it on Kathy V.
Yeah, because I sold it over the winter to some guy that I never even knew or anything. It was all over the phone.
Sure, yeah.
And he bought it up.
Those PG boats, aren't these Bronco boats sort of designed a little bit after those PG boats? Or
more or less.
They're squatter, right?
Bronco, it's a little...
Okay, we were talking about
Rossins.
The Rossins.
No, there isn't too many. There's only one in Moeller, I think.
How would you, now you've ridden in a Rossin, I'm sure, at some point. How would you compare the Bryant, for instance?
Well, the Rossin was better than a Bryant boat. Uh-huh. You know, he had more speed and more accommodations and everything.
How about sea-wise, though? And fishing-wise?
Yeah, they're about the same. Bronco boats are better sea boats.
They are.
They're a lot better, and they're a little faster and more accommodation. They're built heavier, and they pack more. And I mean, it's a good boat for us. Now,
when you compare them.
Well, some of these big ones here. And the boats, they build the big ones because, they put in the chill water, and fishing was, they could stay out, catch more fish. We have to unload every, when we get close to being full, or which we love to do, but we... And even up at Moeller, it's a lot better for, they got chill water. If it gets real rough, either we got to run the Moeller on loader, or we got to take a beating on loading, because we got to unload within 24 hours, fish.
Mm-hmm.
So
you started out with what kind of engine in the Bronco?
The same one. It's a Volvo.
Oh, you started out with a Volvo.
Yeah, he put a 70 D Volvo.
Oh, he started off with Volvos.
Yeah, he put a Volvo in there.
TMD.
TMD 70. He put that in every boat, but when he was building mine, he says, you want that in there, or you want a cat, or whatever you want. Well, six boats before me weren't good, so...
Sure.
So you guys have a little co-op there? I heard you
have. We have a co-op. We bought a spare engine.
Uh-huh.
The guys that can use it, but the guys that had boats and built bigger ones, when they sold their boat, they just sold their share of the co-op in theirs. So if you need a part of that engine, regardless of what it is, you go and get the key from the machinist, and one of us guys got to go with them. They take it off the engine, or the machinist takes it out, write a note down that you took it a certain date, and
rewrite
it, order it, and have the machinist put it back on. Even a reduction gear we got, but it's only a 506. It won't fit some of the others.
So how many years is that?
I think it was right after I got my boat that we got it. But every now and then, parts disappear.
Is it still working?
Well, I guess I can get it going. I mean, it sits in the big shed in there.
Right, but I mean, people are still getting parts.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. And I think somebody just got a part this year off of it.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what's the model? Is it the same model?
It's a D. It's the same thing as mine.
Oh.
Except the reduction gear is like mine, but the newer model, these newer ones are 70Es, which got a bigger reduction gear, so they can't use the reduction gear.
Hmm.
But they can use any other part.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you know, spare keel coolers and all the shafts and everything that we...
And that's the same part of the co-op, too?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Oh.
Or, that was just for the box. For these are boats are like mine.
So you were like 30 of you guys?
There's not that many in there. Probably 20 now.
Uh-huh.
Something like that, too.
So that's looking boats. And
yeah.
Do you have insurance co-op, too, or...?
Well, I think we get a little break on the insurance. Fisherman's Insurance has a co-op. I forget even the name of the company, McKesson or whatever it is. Used to be another one. You get a little break. So,
but you raise how many kids?
Four.
In your family? Four kids? And basically, you've been married and had kids the whole time, almost the whole time you've been fishing up here. How has it worked out? I know it's worked out pretty well the last 20 years, but back in the early days, was it pretty tight, or was it a good enough living?
Well, it was. Well,
you longshore, didn't you?
No, I didn't longshore. I worked in a shipyard as a welder.
Okay.
See, but I did work in the wintertime when the kids were, you know, growing up. You know, four kids. You know. And,
sure.
And you're only fishing here. You know.
Yeah.
I had to work the other 6 months or 7 months.
Yeah.
Well, it must have worked pretty good, see, because in April we celebrated our 50th anniversary.
Really? Congratulations.
Thank you.
Great.
She took care of the kids when I was fishing all those months.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. Well, you were saying that.
I never been home in the summer.
You were up here, right? We were talking about that on the dock.
I've never been home for my wife's birthday. It's always in June.
How many years since you've been home in the summer?
Never.
I mean, never is... Long time.
Well, 50 years.
50 years. I think we're 20, right?
Yeah.
Got out of high school or whatever.
After we got married, I'd never been home. It's always, you know, fishing.
Uh-huh.
Either here or the Sound or home. So I don't know what summer is like. But I will pretty soon, I think.
You were talking earlier about all these changes you've seen, and talk about that a little bit.
Well,
just
changing in the gear.
Yeah, what happened with the monofilament and nylon and all that?
No, we never used. You can't use monofilament.
No, but I don't know. Was it used at all ever?
No,
never was.
Maybe somebody snuck in a piece and hooked it onto his nest near the lead line where nobody's seen, but that's illegal.
Okay, so when it went from
it went from linen to cotton to nylon.
Uh huh. What year was the nylon?
Oh, shoot! I think probably. Right after I started, I think, or around my time. It was old nylon, real heavy twine. Then it went into crystal, and then super crystal.
Uh-huh.
And then you buy them in different net places in Seattle there or wherever, and then there's different strands, and there's thinner stuff like that there. So it went.
Were they still using wooden floats?
Wooden floats. On our King gear, when I was fishing Kings at the company, and then they got rid of those. And the courts are all small. Now you get big white ones. Mm-hmm. They used to have brown ones. You can even see them at night. Now they got the white ones, you know, and you buy your own bigger ones. And you have heavier, naturally, a boat is bigger. You got heavier lead line, heavier cork line, you know, so you don't break it because of the weight of the boat. And then the changes in the boats. You know, better and better boats, faster, more combinations, more capacity, easier to work off of.
Bigger crews?
Yeah, some have more crews.
Now you mentioned king gear. When was king gear used?
Well, we used to fish. We used to go up there May 10th. And we used to fish kings. And the adults would, of course, on those king gear. And huh. Oh, geez, you know.
What was the size of the?
Eight inch mesh, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, big mesh. And we used to fish the kings.
Where?
On offside of Port Muller, up uh-huh. to Sandy River and up there.
Where were they going? Where are the kings going? Well,
lots of snodgrass was fishing.
Well, they go up to King Salmon good. River. They got a King Salmon River there. Uh-huh. Right before you get to Bear River, there's King Salmon River.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know
and
about
then
that.
We fished the Caribou Flats, which is outside of Nelson Lagoon.
Yeah, that's...
Down there, and they used to go into there. We used to fish there. And the cannery didn't can them or anything, but when we were fishing those kings, Vita Food came up there with the three or four splitters, and then they would split this fish and put them in those great big tearses.
You know,
uh-huh. 700 or some pound tearses.
Uh-huh.
And they would, you know, split it there, and we'd bring them in, and they would split them and whatever they had with the company, yes, you know. We got paid whatever it was.
Who did the company?
Well, the company paid us.
Yeah.
But we had to clean them.
Well, what happened to that fishery?
Well, it got less and less and less, and then they didn't come up no more.
Was it the market for the fish, or was it the fish themselves?
Well, fish, they didn't come up for splitter. They used to do, you know, they put up quite a few tearses when there used to be about 15, 20 of us fishing kings, you know, and uh-huh. kept those guys going. And then they shipped that all, you know, that all over the United States and all over those tearses, you know.
So in May, are there kings up there now?
Well, up until this year, I used to go out and fish a couple of days, but there isn't that many. Today, I didn't go out this year, and there's couple three of them went out one day there. They got enough for a whole pack.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
The Nelson Lagooners go out and fish?
No, they fish in the river.
Uh-huh.
We can't fish Caribou Flats no more. That's been closed, I don't know, quite a few years now because it's so close to the river, you know, where the fish goes up to into Nelson River there. Mm. So that's closed. We have to go down to the Black Hills if we want to fish that side or down towards here.
Huh.
Yeah.
Was there any salting going on up there?
No. No. Not when I was there.
Any silvers in the fall?
Yeah, they kept silvers. I fished them. They put on their silver gear.
Uh-huh.
I don't stay that late now, but they do catch.
Did you used to stay for the silver runs?
A lot of people did.
They do now. You know, I used to stay, but now they stay right till they close the plant, September 7th.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the weather gets nasty in August, the end of August, you know.
Tell us about some of your close calls. There must be a couple of you.
Oh, I had some close calls. I never really had real calls. Fortunately, never went overboard in all those years, which it's probably easy to do, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, especially with that long piece of wood that
back there
on that thing.
Conversion there.
You hit the
not really too many, you know. I never got close to a boat, you know, at least now when you have radars and all that. And before there wasn't that many boats. I ran over a guy's nets and got in a wee hole when I didn't see the net.
Oh, yeah.
Guys have done it to me, you know.
Sure.
Not purposely, but sometimes you see it, you know, you take it out of gear and your stern comes up and you just go right over it. Not really. Many close calls or anything there. Unless you go alongside of a tender, you know, when it's real rough, you gotta watch yourself, you know, but nothing that...
Well, that's all in the day's work, that kind of
nothing
stuff.
Nothing where you're going by.
But quite a few guys have been taken a big wave and gone on.
Oh, there's guys that plowed into, you call them lead foots.
Oh, yeah.
It'll slow down for a swell, you know. You can tell and it can be pitch black, and after you're pounding, you can tell which one is going to pound and when you got to slow it down.
Well, there was no lights at all, running lights.
You can't see this well. I mean, not daytime. In daytime, you see them coming. When you see them, well, you pull back. But I can do, and they come in series, you know, and you can tell even, oh, I had some going all the way over me. I took a big breaker here about 4 years, 5 years ago coming out of the pass. God, it came from nowhere. I was just outside almost of the out buoy, you know, and all of a sudden here, it broke, and it was just cold. Boy, just all over me, you know.
Did you used to come through the north entrance at all?
Right. We never, before they put the buoys in, we used to come almost in the pass. Well, that was, we never had no radars or anything. It was all by, we tried to get daylight, you know, so we know. And then we used to come hit the shore, right when that north side was in, what's the name of that point? You lived up there, you know.
But not on the other side. Hook.
No, but there's a...
It starts at K, I think.
Crinitson.
Okay. We used to come right along there, and then it'd be shallow here.
What did you use for a sign?
Well, we would go over this here shallow, and then along that shore, it's deep.
Oh.
Because it's six, seven fathoms there. And then when you got here, on St. Catherine and Cove over here, there was a marker.
Oh, yeah.
Still there. Then you would mark it, and then we'd steer for that marker, and then come up that shore there around Rocky Point and around there.
So you actually came in the north entrance?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, north entrance.
And that closed, what year did that close off, remember?
Oh, I don't know. When they put the buoys in, it's we go through there now.
Yeah, right.
But we used to jump, sometime it would be a little shallow and you just jump over that bar.
How long has that been? 20 years since they started doing that? The buoys?
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, it hasn't been that long, now, you consider.
Now, the big boats can go through there
with
those buoys, you know.
Yeah.
There was a big boat headed up that way the other day, and I thought, geez.
That's the way we used to go, right across. And I'll tell you, in the southeast, going back to Mulder, you have to come down that shore, you got in the stern, you know, all the way till you come to that marker.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got to go sideways. You can see the whole keel of other boats. Like this, you know. Until you get to the north side, then you hug the shore all the way up to Mulder, because it's southeast is offshore.
Right.
How many boats have been lost? How many small boats?
I don't know. They were nice. And then the guys rolled over in them, and they... I think at the time that I was there, I believe I think it was only one guy got lost when he flipped over by the church. But boats have rolled over, and they got out of it. You know, the boat hit the beach, or someone rode it into the beach and then got off. But I think all the time I've been there, Gilman, only one.
Guys, man.
But
the pass right here has claimed a few.
Oh, yeah. And when I was purseining, we used to come down the path, we used to come to the south entrance.
Uh-huh.
We had to come like, we came like this, and then we came around like this, St. Catherine Cove.
Hmm.
And then we headed for that marker, and then up that way. But down the buoys, that's a piece of cake now.
Yeah, those old percentages drew quite a bit of water.
Yeah, 6 feet, 7. Mm-hmm. You know, they get to high water, and turn the corner there. It's on that side there, it's deep. You went by there a few times, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's deep there.
Yeah,
you got to go outside of Rocky Point a little bit there, you know. But down the middle, it's nothing to go through those buoys now. But there was changes.
And it's pretty deep up, even just right before you go through to the Bering Sea side there. There's one place.
Right alongside the shore.
Right along the shore.
The north side, that's deep there.
Yeah.
But there was, there's just like anything else. Your cars change in 50 years and the bullets change in 50 years.
They changed a lot, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. Huh. Even in the first years, they changed.
It must be a lot more comfortable. I mean, it's almost a picnic by comparison.
Well, because you have your
your
stove and your, you know,
lots
table,
of
your phone thing, everything's on top. You can, you know, most of us got iron mics, you know.
Uh-huh.
You can set that, and you got all these windows you can see.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You can fix yourself something, to, you know, mm-hmm. either something before. Yeah, just those two little windows in the front.
Right. Yeah.
And everything's down below, and you're by yourself. You go down there and fix something, and you're up every 2 seconds, and even though there's nothing in sight for miles,
uh-huh.
I mean, that, you know, you got to get up there and look, and
yeah.
And, oh, there's quite a few changes in the boats. The boats and the gear and the individuals are the same.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
And you fish the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The fish, not only here, in Falls Pass, Muller, or any place, the fish go a certain way, and you know which way they're going, and what's their pattern, and that's why you catch them. I mean, they come around the $1 million trap around here, and they go around there. Sometimes if we don't get them, it's their way out. And somehow they go way out, and they bypass us, and go up Yuma Mat. But Muller, they all got to, when they come from the north, they got to go to Bear River.
Mm-hmm.
So they're stopped. I'm not saying the fish are dumb, but they go the same way, and we know which way they go.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you catch them out or in, but they all come. Now, you're coming home.
Right. You and Al worked together. Remember, had kind of a unique deal there.
Oh, so yeah. You guys were buddies. We were partners.
And you split your...
We split our take. And we helped each other and
kind of fished together.
Well,
we looked around.
Well, you weren't hotspots. We were, and you know, and especially down here in this wide open area, you know, you go here, you go there, and if he gets on the fish, you give me a call. But there's it's the same thing now. There's four or five guys in the combine with radios, you know, with chips in there that nobody else can hear, you know.
Oh, scramble?
Scramblers. And,
oh, really?
I'm with four guys.
Yeah.
Everybody. I don't think there's too many individuals.
Who are you with?
Well, there's Tommy and Steve and Dave and Niles, you see. But Stevie sold out, so there's four of us there. And then Brad and Pat, Charlie and Dale, and I forget. And then all the Woodings, you know, they're all three kids and a dad, you know, naturally they're, so you help each other out. But Al and I split the take. Regardless, we didn't care who caught more fish or whatever. It worked out good. All
so you guys were pretty much high boats.
Well,
as I recall, we're up there anyway. Who were some of the best fishermen?
Well, John Peterson.
John Peterson. He everybody to, everybody he, said that.
He used to tell me he could smell the fish. He did. He was.
I liked John.
He was
cool guy.
Outstanding fisherman. Outstanding. He was one of the best fishermen in Bristol Bay, from what I hear. I never fished there, but. He came down here, Falls Pass, Muller. He was the greatest.
What? Now why? I mean,
well, there's a lot of guys got that in there. They just know the tide, and they, like he said, he could smell them, but
yeah.
Whether he could or not, that's the, but he just know. He knew where to go at the right time, at the right stage of the tide.
Mm-hmm. I remember Bob Newman, who fished these waters all his life. I mean, he sniffed the wind, he'd say, coming up southeast, you know. And I mean, he knew the weather, like, it'd take years of just paying attention. Right. You know, paying attention, putting two and two together to get that kind of knowledge.
Well, you see.
And John was around a long time, but obviously he was smart.
But now it's, I don't think you could.
Nobody learns that anymore.
You can't do it now because there wasn't as many boats
right.
at that time.
True.
And you fish the tides a lot. They bounce on one side of the river, that side of the river, here, there.
To get
an open area.
Better now, too.
Open area. The now, there's so many boats, you're just trying to find a place to put your net in the water.
Huh. Oh, really?
You know what I mean? It's
so that's changed a lot. Uh-huh.
That, sure, I know that's the best spot over there, and everybody else does. I go there, there's five guys there already, you know, basically. So there's just so much gear, and it's very competitive, like anything else. And the fish are not returning like they did. But we had a lot of lean years up there.
Yeah.
Got in the 60s, and the 60s, early 70s, 60s. Then we had some real good years. It all balances out.
Mm-hmm.
or it's going to balance out now? What do you think is going on now?
I don't know. it's you know, it was a lot better when there was more competition down here at Falls Pass with all the processors.
Right, they had a bunch of cash buyers.
Oh man, we used to go to Dora Harbor.
That was good.
And they used to have five or six, and they put on these neon lights, pay X amount, groceries,
beer,
fuel. I mean, you know, they were really competitive.
Women.
Well,
almost.
That wasn't there, but I know they're there. They were, like I say, it was very competitive. In fact, a couple of them had reader boards, you know. They start off with somebody, nobody wants to start out with the right price over the air, you know.
Sure.
They want you to go there. So one it started, and geez, within a day, it was like the stock exchange, you know, the bidding.
You guys must have loved that.
And then, one time, when they had them all in there, a couple of them had reader boards, and then numbers would change.
Jeez.
As you come in, you know. But then there were so many processors, which was good, and there was fish.
And there was a lot of fish. Those were some real good.
What was the highest price you've ever seen for red?
Down here, I think I forget what year it was. I think it was in the end of the 70s or the early 80s. I say there's too many years I got up here that I can't remember them all. 220.
220.
220 a pound. I think it was the last day we fished down there, and the processor. And mainly these processors that came there, it was not only the first fish, other than, the river.
Right.
It was the first fish going to the market. They wanted to get their equipment ready for the Bristol Bay.
Okay.
See, they came down there and they go to the bay, and then they get everything, all the kinks taken out of it, and then they would go to the bay. Uh-huh. And there were some the shaky ones too, that people wouldn't take their checks
You got paid cash most of the time.
A lot of them were, we wanted the cash, and you know, because we're in fact, I think one year someone got burnt on one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cash is better.
Well, on something like that there, if you didn't know them, it's something you knew, and there was no problem. Return, these bigger ones.
Uh-huh.
But there were some fly-by-nighters down there, you know. But
I remember Bill Bright doing cash postal orders for $25,000 or whatever. I don't know. That was really a banana for a couple of years there.
Guys would come here and head for bowlers. Got all this green under their pillow. And they'd come in here, and finally Billy stopped it, you know. They come over here and give them their green and he'd Well, you know, they weren't getting a green from Peter Pan. They were just getting a ticket. Right. They didn't like that, which I don't blame them. But anyhow.
Did you see much change when PAF disappeared and what was Peter Pan? Became Peter Pan as Pete Harris and then became Peter Pan. In terms of how management and how the company approached things and things
well,
like that?
Well, I think it was a little tighter and stricter when Peter Pan came. I think PAF, well, I can't tell you because I didn't fish for them that long, only up there and a little bit. I think they have more chiefs than Indians, if you want to put it that way. I don't think that's why they sold or anything like that, but they had...
I've heard that before.
Had a lot of...
Top-heavy.
Yeah.
Top-heavy.
Whereas right. When Nick Bez had it, he ran it all. They had a guy for this, a guy for that, and he was, and he had his right-hand man, Bill Lilly, was tremendous, and then he had his naturally superintendents of each plant, which are all good people. Mm-hmm. Every one of them, are great. But I think he took care of it more as an individual, which he was an individual. I don't know. I think that was a stock outfit, PM. I don't know.
It was a stock. It was stock.
I know Stan Tarrant was the head man of that, but yeah, there was a lot of rooms under.
Have you seen those videos Stan made?
I got one home.
Yeah.
The one about
the PAF.
PAF.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about that La Merced and?
Well, not too much. It's just that it was in Mulder when I was first aiding.
What was?
It was in
just
Mulder.
Just by itself, or did it have a?
Well, it was processing there. I just can't picture it too much. Only seeing it there. And
see, there was didn't they have another sister?
I think they did, but I don't remember. I know the Martinez would start fishing for him.
Uh huh.
For like Nick Bezos did actually, uh-huh. and then when he took over this place down here, then he got rid of them all of a sudden and went someplace else. Uh-huh. I only seen this once.
Uh-huh. You see where it is now?
Well, I thought it was in Anacortes.
Yeah, it is. It's a breakwater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of it. I've seen it there.
Yeah, it's a breakwater to this little marina.
Yeah.
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 I took a picture of it last winter.
Nick Bez. Yeah, I remember him as a kid.
Yeah,
he was a big guy.
Oh.
Or at least he seemed that way to a kid.
He was a pretty honest man, you know. I mean, he grew up as a fisherman, you know, or came over here as a fisherman. And then when he passed away, they got Stan Tarrant, I think, ran PAF for a year or so. And then Johnny took over.
Oh, Johnny.
Peter Pan, you mean?
Yeah, Peter Pan, yeah. And then Johnny took over, and then they sold it.
Yeah.
To whoever got it now.
No, they sold it to the Native Corporation.
Bristol Bay. Just for a few years.
Yeah.
Just for a couple of years, yeah.
I wonder
why they didn't hang on to it.
Well, in retrospect.
Anyway.
Those must have been tough years.
Bad.
I can't remember what year that was.
They sold out Peter, 76 was the first year there was a huge amount of fish. After being really dry for a long time. 75 was horrible. I mean, there was nothing. And I think they sold out 77 or 78. And then 79, I think it sold to the Nichiro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's been Japanese owned now for a long time. And almost all the companies are.
Hmm.
Did you feel that the... in the old days, the superintendents, now most of the time those guys had been fishermen, right? And now it's a more corporate deal, isn't it?
Well, they did. Like Emil, he was superintendent, and he fished Bristol Bay.
Right. I liked Emil.
Fred Shield, he was up in the bay. Now, I know he ran canneries for PAF up there, but whether he fished prior to that, I would say he probably did. And the others, I don't know. I don't think Don ever fished.
Don never fished, no.
And
Bill.
Of course, Bill did.
Bill
did. No.
Uh-huh. But he did work on a tender, so he kind of came worked up that way, anyhow, at least.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, last summer, Bill was, we were asking him a lot of questions at Chow Time and stuff since he was about ready to retire. And he said his first summer in Alaska, 1950 or something, or maybe it was his first summer here. He did work on that boat. Was it the La Merced or another one over there?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he painted this hut here, and he said it was the liquor cabinet for all the machinists.
Probably.
So they came through and they'd have a shot, you know, and that was his.
Well, you probably got.
He's
more,
got a lot of memories.
More information on his cannery than I could ever give you. You know.
Actually, we had a long talk with Bill last year, and
we didn't tape it,
unfortunately. We just
Well,
we'll do it again.
We'll do it again.
See, you know, he knows more. All I know is the time I spent here, you know, waiting to go out fishing or stopping here or coming in sometime or something like that. It was very productive.
Yeah.
This was.
Very persistent, very productive.
Yeah, I think they still had on the wall by the retorts
there.
The number of cases when they had the record year. I forget what number that was.
Well, I remember because I kind of paid attention to that. Back in the 30s, 1932 or something, they did over 230,000, but we beat that in 1980, just the year before it burned. was the record year for this. For the, I believe. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I think so. 200. It was a lot of cases. I think. Anyway, it was close.
Well, heck, the trap used to take care of this place. Oh, the $1 million trap.
Yeah.
You know, and then plus all the other fish came in from the same fleet. Yeah, they had, I believe, they had 11 traps from here to the main one, the big one. And it was still working the first year I fished here, Saney, 50.
Hmm. All right. So the first year you gillnetted down here in 60, your own boat.
60.
Was 1960.
Excuse me, 61.
61.
Okay. And that was 60 when I started up there and I had a conversion. I didn't come down.
Okay.
That was the first year I got here, 61.
Yeah, that's the first year I got. 61, and then with 50, I was here saving.
Now, how did you learn where the good spots were? Just follow the old guys help you out? How did that work for
not really.
A 30-year-old guy?
Well, I was,
they give you a lot of...
Well, I...
Gossip.
By person.
All right, so you already knew some
I knew,
some of the
I
spots.
Knew
yeah, right.
Here, you know. But that's not saying that the fish are going to be there for a gillnetter is the same as, but they do run on the streaks and tie drifts and stuff like that there. And then, you know, then you start spreading out, looking, you know, and here you make a set there and there's good fish there and you naturally you're going to repeat to that place at a certain stage of the tide and stuff like that. And Moeller, I per se there, you know, I knew where the river was and its areas. But it's altogether different when you're purseining and you're just the number on the boat or a crew member.
Right, right.
Here you got the horns, you got the net, you're steering, I mean, you're everything. Okay. You make a mistake, you make your own mistake.
Right.
There, if there was a mistake, the guy up on top, he makes the mistake.
But it must have been kind of neat to, you know, I can imagine a young guy getting his own boat and everything. It must have been kind of neat. Kind of heady times.
Well, it wasn't really. There's some guys that are younger than I that started, but it just happened. Yeah.
What happened to those fishermen that used to come up here from the Columbia River? Remember that?
There's a few of them that came up to Mulder, but not, I guess they...
What happened? They just kind of petered out, didn't they?
Up there at Mulder, when I started, there were... 80% were Norwegians, at least. 80%.
Mm-hmm.
Not because Fred Shields was one.
You mean actually Norwegian born, you think? Or
there were some.
First generation.
Well, there was some that came from over there. Uh-huh. You know,
Olaf Larsen?
He was born here.
He was born here.
I'm positive he was.
Art Hoglund? He was born here.
Yeah. Art Hoglund, he's younger than I am. He was born here.
He is?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, really?
But there were a lot of them that were born over there. And they're all good fishermen, Norwegians. Real good. And most of them were for Peter Pan, then he, you know, came over. But there were some at PDF, too. There's quite a few. But then there was, you know, two of us at that time that were Croatian, like I am, and then it was Frank Pazika, he was a Polak, and then there's there's a couple other,
Italians?
There was the Grannies, a couple
Billy.
Of the Grannies, but the majority at that time were Norwegians, and then, you know, later on, whatever, could get here.
Well, it's a lot less ethnic now. I mean, any.
Well, I think they were in the fishing industry quite a bit up in the bay and all over, and they came from the Norway where.
Sure, they came from fishing.
Well, my dad was
backgrounds.
Was born in on an island, and they done just fishing. That's all he does.
In Croatia.
And then I was, you know, fishing. You know.
Sure.
And most of your my. Nationality that you're in Vancouver, fishing, Bellingham, Everett, Seattle, Tacoma, Green Harbor, San Francisco. You know, they all came from the Dominican coast. They were all fishermen over there, either their parents or them individually. Mm-hmm. Came over from there, and naturally they got into fishing. Uh-huh. They wouldn't go to Pennsylvania in the coal mines when they, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know. No, that there, no, is, a lot, there is a lot of ones that were, they came over from my nationality that were born inland, uh-huh. and they ended up
Sarajevo.
You know, they ended up in Croatia, you know, in the coal mines. A lot of them were up in Roslyn and Kalalem around there, the coal mines that were, you know, that's what they done there, and they just went to the same trade.
What do you think, if you just look to see what happened with the Saners used to be on top, so to speak.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
And then was the Gilneters, and then it was the Setneters. Everything's kind of turned around. You notice that?
Well, I don't think there was that many Setneters, was there?
No, well, they didn't count for much, did they?
No.
But now some of these Setneters are making more than anybody
else. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they got a good spot. That fish go there and, you know, take that operation in Nelson Lagoon that Pete Kust had. That was, gosh, that was a great operation, you know. And then now Mike, the Hoikers, you know, bought the operation, and they do well in there, too. See, that fish is going to come by that area. And Saners, even down here in the last few years.
They haven't been done, no.
I think a couple, 3 years ago, that they done pretty well. You know, they got to be schooled up for Saners,
sure.
As you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can't go scratch for 100 fish, 200 fish at all. And well, they only have about a six-man crew now because of power blocks, you know, and stuff like that there. For a gill netter to get 500-600 fish is a decent price. Is a pretty good day.
Right.
And you split that.
Well, plus half the time your boat's shut off. You're just watching the net.
Yeah.
Saners are running the gear all the time.
Nice.
And it's more costly.
It is. You know, well,
boat has to be bigger. You got all these skiffs.
And then the insurance, it's quite a bit. You know,
yeah.
but they done great when the fishing was here. It was all Saney.
Right.
It wasn't no Gilley until he came down and he tried it, and now it's Gilley. So there is Saney.
Well, then the shift from the Saners used to also be able to target the dogs and puppies.
Well, yeah.
Now there's no much more market.
Well, no, there's not a price for them, but they're still there.
Yeah, still there.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You catch so many of them.
They're still there.
You got to catch a lot of humpies, you know. Just like Harrington, I told you, Harrington Bay, up at the north side, they built two canneries there. And that there was so many chums there.
Uh-huh.
In fact, when I fished on the Dreamland, and Paul Senior and a couple of the guys were on there that had fished with him in the late 30s. You know, some guys fished with him quite a few years. And they used to fish these dogs right there in Harrington Bay. I don't know if you've been there. You've been there.
I've been there, no.
God, they make two hauls a day and plug the boat, and they just go about 10 minutes away and dump them off in the...
These are good, bright dogs?
Yeah.
Well, I get in there and not as bright. But they're only getting 2 cents a piece for them.
Well, they used to can almost anything, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they started to deplete, then the cannery shut down. You know, they couldn't afford to, you know, keep a cannery going there and all the equipment for the chums. There wasn't that many there. So we went over there gilling for them, you know, years ago. We had a closure over there. You wouldn't go there while it was open over there because the price between a red and a chum.
Yeah,
red's always been the premier fish.
Always.
But it is interesting that the Japanese have kind of, I mean, chum eggs, if you look up what's going on up the Yukon River and so on, it's all chums there. The eggs.
That's where the money is.
Yeah, no, that's just like down in the Sound when they fish the fall, which they don't fish that much. And when the gillnetters go out and they catch chums, they get more for the roe than they do for the body.
I was told that it's true or not. This cannery right here, that 1 year they actually made more money on eggs than they did fish.
Possibly.
At the beginning, we used to throw all the eggs overboard.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
With the gurry, everything just went over and passed.
Yeah.
And then we had a guy called, I think called Fish Egg Pete. He came and he would fix the eggs for bait. You remember that? He was out here on the dock, and he had a little deal. He mixed it with borax and I don't know what else. And it was just for bait, for taking it down below. And then the Japanese came and saw this, and they went, "You're throwing this stuff overboard."
And they couldn't believe it. They got the egg house up in Muller now, and they box up all the eggs.
Oh, sure.
Japanese.
When did those guys show up, anyway? When did the Japanese egg houses start?
Jeez, I don't know. They've been up there for quite a while, up in Muller.
Ever, as long as I've been up, or up around.
Yeah, they weren't here in the beginning.
That's 27 years, 26.
Early 70s, maybe?
Yeah, they've been there a long time. Even in the old fish house they had, they were doing that.
A few more minutes here, if there's anything we really want to cover.
I don't know.
We could see them again later.
I don't know, what would you call it, the Alpha and Omega. I'm at the Omega now, after 50 years up here, seeing all the changes, and naturally, I feel healthy enough to be up here. I have my son and my grandson that I don't do that much work on there, but all this here bickering on prices and no fish, I think that my time's to go and let the younger people take over, if I can sell.
Well, isn't that all taken care of already?
No, not really.
Really? Well, I just figured.
No, Jack. No, I don't think so. His back bothers him.
Really?
Yeah. And there's not. I don't know. It's tough to get in it now. It's hard to get in it. So.
Boy.
I
wish I had gotten a permit now that I look back.
Well, yeah.
Jay Trottier kind of asked me to go fishing with him. I didn't even think about it. I was going to college. I loved Alaska, but I didn't know what my life...
You would have been down there with me now, an old-timer.
Maybe, but I feel fine where I'm at, too. It's cool, but it's another way. I always look at the fishermen, and it is a club, It is a kind of a gang,
Well, it's your occupation,
sure.
And if you've done well in it, just like anything else, it's your life, Like I say, I haven't been home for a summer, and that's all I...
And you guys all know the privations and the waves and all that, but I don't know.
Well, you would learn in a hurry, I'll tell you that.
Well,
it won't take long.
Well, I did fish one summer, set and inning. I enjoyed it. I really did. Yeah. 91. It was a terrible year. I only made about 600 bucks.
I think sometimes setting any is the hardest.
It's hard work. Oh, yeah.
Especially when it's blowing, you got to go alongside of that skiff
and pull up kelp.
It's hard work.
It is.
And you got to go off the beach. You got to take your skiff in and dump it off.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if I can.
But Buck, he's got to. If you make the money he does, or some of these other guys who have good sights, these guys up in Stepovac, family operation, that's perfect.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of them up in the pay like that.
And you can afford to get enough help to make it pay.
Well, he has his whole family aboard there, doesn't he, the kids?
No, actually no, he hires a crew, but they go out sometimes.
Because he has them here now.
Yeah, they're just... Uh-huh. So where's this fishery heading?
Hopefully it's not going down and keep going down. It should have a rebound like the stock market. I hope it is.
Yeah.
I know that the return for the Bay this year is not as great as the years they have predicted.
Mm-hmm.
But then, predictions, not anybody can make a prediction. But then, I don't know.
But most of
the thing, we could take a bad year as far as the fish, but the fish and the price.
Price, no.
That is, that's bad.
Yeah.
It's tough, And I don't know. Boy, I'll tell you, I don't want to say too much about that stuff here because it's for this year, but. The two of them together is not, it's tough.
How long has it been since it's been, right now they're offering 42 cents, so.
I've never seen it like that in all my years. Have you ever seen
it 42?
But I've seen it less than that because the first year I personally, in the year 1950, we got 32 cents a piece.
A fish.
Yeah. You can't compare that.
Right, but as a gill netter.
No.